Hey everyone, this is Alex with a quick note about Patreon before we get going this week. We've decided to restructure our Patreon money so that a portion of all of our proceeds will be donated every month to organizations that fund education opportunities and scholarships for minority students around the United States. This month we're focusing on the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, but we're definitely open to more suggestions as they come in. Again, we plan to donate the money we make after covering the cost of our show, which means that the more people that join up, the bigger that donation will be. So if you'd like to join our Patreon, head to patreon.com/MichaelScott and join for $5 a month. For that small price, you get an exclusive Patreon-only podcast called Scott's Tots, where we answer all our patron questions, doesn't matter how big or small, that's what she said, and we post videos of those recordings just for fun. But beyond that, you now get to support an ongoing donation that will help accomplish the mission that Michael Scott could not. Okay, let's go.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and distributor of Hers Chips, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, regional manager, Utica Branch.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Oh, things are going really well. Are they? They are. That's great. That's so great. I want to hear more about how happy you are with Pam. Can you tell me more about that? Thank you so much for coming to Utica and breaking my copier and telling me how well things are going in your relationship. Really, thank you.
All right, you are welcome. I'm going to go because of traffic.
Traffic, yeah. So. Go because of traffic. Definitely, beat the traffic.
Mm-hmm. I will.
I know that one was very long, but I thought we should all just sit with that moment.
Worth it.
For this episode, because that's one of the cringiest moments. That's up there with Diwali and Scott's Tots, I think, that moment.
It really sets the tone, because every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office, and this week we're talking about the relationship between Jim Halpert and Karen Filippelli.
This is a big topic. The more I think about it, the more I was like, this gets to the heart of so much about this show.
Definitely.
It's what goes on.
Definitely.
Yeah, we've done relationship episodes with Jim and Dwight and Michael and Pam. And there is an element of they last the whole show and it evolves quite a bit and it changes and it shows different sort of sides of the characters and how they lean on each other and how they go to war with each other. This is different. This is all about one relationship that kind of spans one season and then two plus episodes at the end. And it comes at a pretty crucial time in the show.
It's a unique relationship out of all the romantic relationships we see, because it's a main character having a relationship with not a main character. And I mean, Karen is in it for a whole season pretty much, and then a little bit here and there. But as opposed to, say, Andy and Angela, which also didn't work out, they're both still in the main cast. And so the things that, and of course, like Jim's romantic life for the first half of the entire show is such a huge part of the plot. It's such a big part of why people kept watching the show. So this is something that they really don't do again on The Office, and something that I think a lot of people have a lot of opinions about, a lot of memes about this relationship.
Definitely. Well, I was going to say, too, that, you know, we've never done a Jim episode, and we never will. I'm just kidding. No, but we've never done a Jim episode. And really, one of the first, you know, when we were first thinking about doing this, the concept for this show, is one of the ideas we had was to do an episode just discussing the question of, is Jim a bad person?
Is Jim a good guy?
Is Jim a good guy?
We recorded that at my old house. We recorded that at my old house upstairs when it was super hot. And we recorded for like an hour, 45 minutes, just answering the question, is Jim a good guy? That was a long recording. Mm-hmm. And they will never see the light of day.
Yeah, and because a lot of people think that he isn't a good guy because of this story arc. So I'm excited to dig into it. I think you're absolutely right. It gets to a lot of what the heart of the show is.
And I was telling these guys before we started this, and Alex told me to stop and wait till we actually started recording. But it's very difficult to treat this topic, or maybe not difficult, but treating this topic with nuance and the context and the right sort of touch, I think, isn't super easy. I think it's really easy to come down on one side and say, oh yeah, Jim sucks. He's the worst. He did this. Or Jim is, one of these hero characters in the show, and Jim's great. We all love Jim. And it's somewhere in between. I think that's the challenge of this episode, is trying to sort all it out.
It goes into some messy relationship territory that I think can be relatable for a lot of people. Like you said, I mean, it's really difficult to discuss this, especially through a TV show that's written, edited. It's all these things that we only see certain characters' perspectives. We don't get nearly as many talking heads with Karen as we do with Jim. I mean, right there, we're seeing Jim's side of this relationship pretty exclusively. We do hear Karen from time to time, and this, we sort of see the struggles that she's going through with it through her involvement with, like, planning a party with Pam or something. So we get these, like, the decks are just stacked differently between Jim and Karen as we watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, too, more important than the characterization of whether or not Jim is good or bad, or that kind of question, I think that to me is a little bit less significant than how well done this sort of stretch in the show is. Rewatching this to prep and watching this season only focusing on Jim and Karen and editing out all the Dwight and Michael and Andy silliness really changes the way that it watches. It was really interesting to prep for this. And there is something about these three characters, you know, far away and then brought back together, with the tension between them, the idea that you're in this place, but you together, but you can't say how you feel and you don't know how the other characters feel. That is really very pure Office. It really speaks to the Office DNA, the silence, the long beats, the looks at two characters in another room and wondering what they're thinking. And it was really kind of heartbreaking, in a good way, because I love the show so much, to see how well done this sort of stretch is. How well done the complexity and the ambiguity is.
You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. It's like, it's the idea of people not saying what they want, not knowing what they want, and hurting each other in the process is what is so heartbreaking about The Office in many other ways, you know, not just with Jim and Karen and in life too. Like, and it's why I always enjoy the bleaker days of The Office. Season three is very bleak, and you're absolutely right. They do a good job of kind of covering it up with a lot of silliness between Andy and Dwight and Michael. But, it hurts, but in a way it feels good. Anyways, we'll get into all of it. And let's start by talking about, because I think this is kind of her episode of our podcast, is Karen Filippelli. Karen Filippelli.
Abodanza.
Karen Filippelli, played by Rashida Jones, famously the daughter of Quincy Jones, a famous record producer. If you've been living under a rock, Rashida Jones, incredible documentary filmmaker, director, actor on Parks and Rec.
The basis for my real life partner, a nurse named Anne in Parks and Rec.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
She's in all these banner ads for glasses that are on my computer when I'm on the web, on the internet.
You're right.
What I'm talking about?
Oh my God. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Wow.
Is that a joke?
How can you get ads for for corrective eyewear. You don't wear glasses or contacts.
I don't wear glasses, but maybe that's the point. Maybe they know something I don't.
You think it's Rashida Jones? Yeah.
I worked on one season of Angie Tribeca in Los Angeles, and I got to meet Rashida Jones and sit in a room with her a couple of times. She's so
you couldn't
awesome
get her for the show,
nice.
Man?
Nah, man, I don't really want to screw up our friendship like that.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But the invitation is open.
If yeah.
Call her up and be like, yeah. Rashida, our podcast is going really well. It's just going great. I'm it's like not that we don't want to see you, but it's just going so well.
Nah, I was like a props department assistant. So I was in the back corner of the room. But,
a PDA, huh?
I got to watch her work. That is it. She's awesome. But Karen Filippelli works at the Stanford branch. Right. She's works in sales. She loves to have fun. She loves Call of Duty. Josh has to remind her, Karen, let's
Call of Duty.
Josh has to remind her one time, Karen, let's keep it under $20 a person this time for their late night meal, for their sushi.
Got it. But she has the ever just small sheepish look. And I've brought this up before, but I really want to. I'm glad they don't say what happened, but I really want to know what happened.
I mean, they lived it up. I mean, you can only imagine that Karen was like, oh. Hey.
Guys, we got the card. Let's each buy
exactly.
a ton of stuff. Yeah,
it's like, I don't care. They didn't give me a limit. In a lot of ways, I think they set it up early for us that Karen is like a female Jim. She works in sales. She's smarter than most of the people she works with, but doesn't have a lot of motivation to go further because she doesn't really like where she works. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think she does have, she might be a little more driven than Jim for the most, I think overall, because she does like, she does
she
make,
reprimanded
she also applies
Josh.
For the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess so. I think she presents herself as a little more, I don't know. She's a little more present, she seems, in the company than Jim, I would say. That's just the vibe I get from her.
There is, it is interesting that Karen is portrayed as one of the only other characters besides Jim and Pam who's sort of on their same level in terms of the way that they perceive the workplace, perceive the world, that they can kind of joke around with each other. I think that Karen eventually goes to Scranton and does have friendship moments with Pam in Benihana Christmas, in Ben Franklin. Like, I think that all makes sense. It all checks out that the person that would date Jim is kind of on their same level, or they can joke around together in the same way. Rewatching these episodes to prep, watching Stanford, it was like, man, this is really just Micro Office. There's mm-hmm. Jim, Karen, Andy, kind of as a fill-in for Dwight, and then Josh as the fill-in for the manager. But there are no other ensemble characters that really interact
right.
with everyone. Tony shows up at one point to ask Karen to help him with the vending machine.
She's
but other than that, there's no ensemble.
It's
this edited little focused little version of The Office to tell the same types of jokes just in another setting.
Yeah, they're like, let's get the three main ingredients, make a little side dish. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
You even take the manager, the Michael manager factor out of it, where it's mm-hmm. just it's just Jim, mm-hmm. the antagonist, and then his coworker that he eventually ends up striking up a friendship and then dating.
But, you know, I mean, with Karen, too, it's like, I mean, I think that we get a sense that she's not happy when we meet her, because Jim comes in and she's interested in Jim. And when
she's like very not impressed with Jim.
Yeah. Well,
she's
at
like
at first she thinks yeah she's
like,
kind of annoyed.
This guy
by
is
his
so look. Lame. Yeah, he's always like, oh, I'll do it. Like he's volunteering for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always looking at the camera like this. What is that?
Yeah.
She's not buying.
Yeah, she's already reached this point of like, who cares? All of a sudden, this guy showed up in a whole film cruise with him, and you know.
Yeah,
I guess that's the other thing we have to remind
ourselves. Over that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. When Stanford branch is going to close and people can have the option to move to Scranton and work for that branch, she goes. you know, I mean, she wants to go. She doesn't really, I don't think we really get the idea that she loves her life in Stanford.
Yeah.
I think a couple of things. I think number one, one of my favorite personality traits about Karen is that she makes fun of Jim. And she's not afraid to like prank Jim or help prank other people in the office for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, I love when Call of Duty, when she kills Jim and he just says psychopath. There's an element of that where she's really making a nice basket. I love that too. When he comes in with the bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. She does make fun of him a lot.
Yeah, and I actually really like that. There's somebody who's kind of punching Jim a little bit in that regard. Like that's a pretty fun dynamic. It's a nice change from the rest of the way the show normally is. And then the other thing too that I kind of thought was really interesting that I think is when I look back at this in memory or when I think about their relationship, I don't often remember this. The timeline is really blurry in terms of when they actually start dating. You see these moments that they share in the office, and it seems like they're becoming closer, but there is a moment where Jim has to say, "I have started seeing Karen." And then at one point,
which is
when,
always how he talks about it. He's always very,
"I am doing this." And
he's,
now
he's
I'm
convincing himself and the audience at the same time. Every time he talks about Karen, it happens again at Phyllis's wedding at the end. Yeah. Anyway.
And at one point when they're talking, when he is talking to Pam and about the fact that Karen wants to rent an apartment down the street from him, he mentions that they've been dating a month. So they haven't been together very long.
Right.
It feels like they've been together much longer, I think, than they actually have.
Yeah, we'd like to think that they've been together ever since they met in Stanford, but that's, you know, that's not the case.
No. I mean, they did all the, I mean, when they get super drunk, you know, filing the whatever that one night, and she gives him a ride home, and that whole thing seems like she knows where the night's headed. She's like, all right, these guys are going to get tanked and I'm going to have to be the grown up here. And she's just like, I'll just going to give him a ride home. You know, they're not dating at that point. They're not really dating
until they get to Scranton.
Until they get to Scranton. Exactly. Cause yeah, like you said, Jim advises Karen of like initially has the, you know, New York is 45 minutes away and you want to move to Scranton, which is sort of this, I don't know how much Jim realizes it's this backhanded thing because she's, as she says right after that, she's like, I don't know if he's into me, but I'm kind of into him. And she's trying to play it cool and play it slow. And Jim's just sort of like, you know, not really totally aware of that. And basically insinuates, hey, don't move to Scranton. You should move to New York, even though I'm going to go back to Scranton. And so already, like, Jim's laid the groundwork that like he's not interested in a long-term relationship with Karen.
Well, when he does tell her that at first he's not sure, and then when he comes back and he says, I am taking that job and Scranton's not that bad, so he does kind of open the door to say like, hey, you should come here. And it is implied at the very least that I'm going to be there and you could come here too.
I read that as Jim, as he's wanting to do, is like initially say or do something that is not well received. He thinks about it. He realizes maybe what was going on, and Jim doesn't want to be hated by anybody, so he wants to like smooth it over. And so he says that. I wonder if like if Jim had never even come back and said that, of like, would Karen have just cut the line and been like, all right, I'm going to New York or whatever?
See, there's a third option here, which is like, you know, he's like either tell her, no, don't come to Scranton, or yes, come to Scranton. I could totally see us having a relationship together forever. But there's a third option where it's like, hey, I need to be honest with you. The reason I left Scranton is because I have this weird relationship thing where I was into somebody who's married and now she's not getting married and she's still there and I don't really know where we stand. And it's a little complicated and maybe we should talk about it.
But they're not dating at that point. They're coworkers. I think that's why like the show feels real, is because it's dealing in ambiguity. Jim doesn't necessarily want to tell his coworker, even someone that's his friend, about all this sort of I hesitate to call it baggage, but this extra stuff that he's carrying around with him about going back to Scranton.
So the question is actually like, when was the first date? Because basically by the merger, they're dating.
Exactly. We don't see it. There is a moment in the Andy Green book where they talk about how there's a scene that I think they even filmed that the Stanford people go out and have after work drinks together, and then Jim and Karen kind of have a sloppy drunken kiss. But they cut it because it felt like too soon. It felt as if they wanted to be very careful with the pacing of Jim and Karen.
And I can see that.
And I think it helps it a little bit that they're not dating until they get to Scranton.
I assume that when they move there and Jim is like, or Karen is like, let me show you around. Let me show you some places. And that happens and they start dating. That's what I assume. This is something about, if the thesis of this, of The Office is like the beauty of ordinary things, this relationship is also about like ordinary things, but the pain of ordinary things. Cause I think this is kind of ordinary in some ways, this sort triangle. I mean, how many movies, how many stories in history are about a love triangle like this? And this is like, Jim doesn't bring up Pam because I don't think Jim wants to be perceived as like a drama guy who's like jumping the gun with Karen while they're in Stanford being like, oh, by the way, there's this girl that I used to date. And then Karen would be like, okay, who cares? Why are you telling me? And then Jim being like, I just thought maybe you'd, I don't know. Like, Jim's not going to bring it up at all. Like, Jim's going to try and play it cool because that's what he always tries to do.
Well, because...
And Karen, and neither of them, I think, want to seem too eager because that's what an early stage of a crush is like both of you are like trying to be cool about it. And so that's what ends, it entangles this entire thing before it starts. Because you're right. If Jim had just been honest right away, who knows what would have happened.
I think Jim's smart, right? Like, he probably considered that option to just tell Karen. The issue with it is that once he starts talking about that, he knows that he still has feelings for Pam. Right? So it's like, that's extremely difficult to talk about for him. It's not going to be like, oh, this whole thing happened and it's going to be tough to move on, because he's in the back of his head is like, but I don't want to move on. There's still hope.
I think there are a couple things going on. At the end of the merger, when Jim and Karen are not together, that would not be the right time to talk about Pam. Mm-hmm. After they start dating, which is a moment we don't see, because in branch closing, when Jim and Karen are talking,
that's
when they're having that discussion in the Stanford branch. And the merger and beyond, it comes up that Jim never told Karen about Pam. I would argue that somewhere in between there, after they start dating, he should have mentioned Pam.
Yes,
100%.
So 100%. Just to kind of help clarify this sort of string of things, because we don't see that we don't see them get together, and in that sort of blank spot is where you would think that Jim would talk to Karen about Pam. But the other thing that I noticed in rewatching this is how Jim is like a very common trait for Jim is he'll avoid these discussions by joking all the time.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes.
Karen, to her credit, pushes him into a corner and she's like, hey, do you still have feelings for her? Like she really pushes him. And even though he doesn't give great answers most of the time, you can tell that she's just trying to avoid it and trying to continue their relationship.
Mm-hmm. She is totally the adult in this relationship, at least early on. Because she does. She's just like, yeah, I'm moving my whole life here. Like, what are we doing? Let's talk about this. Like, am I putting roots down here or am I not? Like, and she's totally in the right. And Jim is completely in the wrong.
There's so much that Karen does that just like makes her look so much more mature than him. And, you know, that that she moves for him. I think there's even something really beautiful that's really, really subtle that is like, she doesn't really understand the Jim prank thing. Like, she kind of tells him at one point that she's too busy to help him with a Dwight, you know, pranking Dwight.
Well, she's too busy. Like, Dwight had some password encryption on all of her.
She's inherited 15 new clients from Dwight, and each one of them is password protected with a different mythical creature.
Right. So she, doesn't want to help pranking Andy. I think that's what it is.
Go ahead.
But anyways, she learns eventually that the pranking is important to Jim and plays along, right? Like,
Cocktails.
Business school, I was going to say. She plays along with the vampire prank.
And oh, she does. That's
and
right.
They
That's
kind right. of have a whole. You can. You don't see it happen, but Jim and her have like a whole script. Like, but Jim, this garlic bread is cold.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Jim. You know, here's that aspirin you wanted.
Yeah. What Claire?
Right. Yeah.
I would say though that when they're in Stamford, they mess around with Andy with the squeaky chair, and she does kind of see the way that Jim is kind of messes with people in the office. They do go back and forth with the squeaky chair and the love me that whole thing.
Right.
And when they first come back and and then yeah, but when Jim is trying to get he's messing with Andy by giving him terrible dating advice for Pam. Karen says to Jim, "Oh, I want in. Who's the target? Give me an assignment."
I live to frolf.
So, well, Karen is playing along with it. But what happens is Jim kind of backs away. He says, "Oh, you know, I already kind of sicked him on Pam, so I kind of feel bad." So they're just so rarely on the same page with these kinds of things.
When is it? What's the part where like Karen sees Pam and Jim like laughing about something? Oh, it's Jan's boobs. It's Jan's breast augmentation. Excuse me, but like she
great trivia team name Jan's boobs.
There are a few moments that happen like that, but there's one in the return where it's the one where Karen can't help prank Andy because of the clients, and so Jim and Pam throw his phone in the ceiling, and after he punches the wall, they're having the fiesta for Oscar, and she and Jim are laughing about it, and Karen sees it. And then later, Karen goes into the conference room and sits right next to him and says, "Do you still have feelings for her?" And he just says, "Yes." And then she gets up and walks out.
There's several moments.
She does. Yeah. There is another moment later, where they do see where Jim turns around and looks at Pam, and they both kind of joke about Jan's boob job. And then Karen comes in. She sees it, and she comes in. She goes, "Oh, my God, can you believe that?"
Yeah.
There's so many moments of one of the three of them watching two of the others and having a reaction to it.
I think the main thing with when we talk about Jim and Karen is just looking at what Jim is – simultaneously reckless and just oblivious, I think, to a lot of things. Like we said, when the pranking, for example, Karen gives Jim a perfect runway to bring up Pam during the cocktails prank when she's pointing out all these guys she used to date. And Jim's like, "How many of these guys have you dated?" And she's like, "I got you. I so got you." Like, it's a great prank that Jim would have pulled. It does show that, oh, these two do have enough in common and they do have a kismet here. It's kismet that they could actually have something. And after that moment, like, that's a perfect on the way home or something from cocktails when they're like, "Hey, that was really funny. You know, it made me think, and I should tell you this. I actually did like Pam. I did want to date Pam at some point, and you know, it didn't work out."
And
like,
now this
the perfect time to talk about it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. And he doesn't. And it's one of those that just this little seed that grows into something destructive later on.
But you know what? I actually think that happens after Karen knows about Pam. The return is episode 14.
Is that after?
And cocktails is episode 18. I'm glad you brought that up, though.
This is
the first time in rewatching it that I've seen that prank. I've always, you know, obviously we've watched the show many times, but I've always just kind of seen that prank by Karen as just kind of her pranking Jim. But I didn't realize how closely it must mirror the emotions that she was feeling when she found out about Pam. It feels a lot sharper and a lot more pointed if you think about it from that way. They're still laughing together, but it is a perfect inverse of the way that she must have felt when she found out about Pam.
I wonder if that's also
100%
with Karen as a way of communicating to Jim, like, "Hey, it's cool. Like, I accept you. That's fine." And her way is like, Jim speaks in pranks, and here's a prank that's saying like, "Oh, I dated all these guys." And maybe it's like, that's a good one. Like, that's a prank about me and Pam. I get it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, man, she's just so, my mind's jumping ahead to the job at the end of season three, but
that fast, huh?
A mile an hour.
Mile an hour. But like, you know, she is telling Jim, like, come on, like, we can't stay in Scranton. There's one too many people there. Like, and when she says it, like, you can look at it a couple of ways. You could look at it like she's like, like, I hate that bitch. We got to get away from her.
Sean.
But you could also look at it.
Warning.
Like,
warning.
I'm just saying that you could look at it that way. But you could also look at it in that she's like, you know, we need to start working on our lives together. And this is just, you know.
Right back at you, bitch.
There we go. You know, I think that she's coming from a little bit more of a place like, you know, she's thinking about their life together and thinking that, you know, you're just too distracted by that. And I know that you don't, you know, you said you don't want anything to happen really there, you know, and we got to, I don't know. I see her being so much more mature about it. Like, it's okay. It's okay that you have feelings that way, but like, let's move. Let's just move together. I up and moved for you. We moved to Scranton from Stamford and we'll move again.
She seems to say in Traveling Salesman, when I'm thinking this because she's in the post makeover with Phyllis, hair and makeup.
Yeah.
And Phyllis has told her about Pam and she asked Jim to get a coffee. So she goes to talk about it right away. And she says, you know, I moved here. And Jim explains that, yeah, I had a crush on Pam and I told her about it and she didn't feel the same way, which is kind of a half truth. You know, he doesn't really tell the full truth there. But it's not necessarily a lie. It's kind of a shitty thing to do.
Oh my gosh.
But Karen seems to be of the mind that it's okay if you did, but as long as you're over it and we can move on, then we can move on. The problem is that Jim never actually shows that he's over it. And he keeps showing that he isn't over it. That seems to come up again and again and again. And you know, to your point, when she says there's one too many people in Scranton, you know, he says, yeah, Kevin, he makes another joke.
Yeah.
She really has to pin him down and try to get a straight answer because he can't just be honest with her in that way.
Right. She's like, you can't deal with this.
He said I was dumb.
Now I'm back on the Kevin drop page. It's the most fun drop page I have.
Oh, I will say, not to take us off topic, but after the Kevin episode, I've noticed so many more Kevin and moments that I've really loved. There's no end.
There's a lot that we didn't touch on. We might need a Kevin
Jim,
part too.
Look out, Roy. The way that Kevin is willing to like stick up for Jim and get in the fight with Jim if Roy comes around is really admirable.
Really quick too, one other one. When Charles Minor first introduces himself to everyone and Kelly has the delayed hi and then Kevin has the second delayed hi.
Yeah, yeah.
That moment absolutely kills me because you can see Idris Elba start to crack and he doesn't. Anyway.
To bring us back to Karen, there's a great moment where Kevin, after Roy makes the attack in the negotiation, they're all in the break room and Kevin says, so Karen, how does it feel that Roy wanted to beat up your boyfriend over another woman? She says, I feel great, Kevin. I feel really great.
She knows exactly how to talk to Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah, another classic Kevin, just laying it all out there. No tact of any kind. Here's a bird's eye question for you guys. Do you think, if you switch them, if you had Karen working the phones at Dunder Mifflin for a few years and then Pam came in, do you think it'd be switched around? Is the chemistry between Jim and Pam, is it that, or is it the familiarity? Do you think if you switch them, it would be the same story?
I mean, that's such an interesting question, because what I was thinking about was like, is it part of it that Karen is kind of so mature and a little further along in her career than Pam? Does that make her not a good option for Jim? Like, you know,
is Jim just lonely and being reckless with his feelings?
Or he just wants somebody, who he can help more, right? Which is like, I'm just spitballing here, but yeah. Like,
and wait, in this situation, Pam comes in where? Pam is working at Stanford.
I'm just saying, like, if you think if Karen had been the receptionist for mm-hmm. a while, that Jim and Karen would be dating already, or have a Jim and Pam type relationship.
Maybe that's something. It's difficult to think about because I kind of struggle to see Karen as a receptionist.
Yeah, well, let's say she's a salesman or whatever.
Sure. Okay, yeah.
Basically, I mean, if the real question I'm asking is do you think that Jim and Pam chemistry is like strong enough that if Pam were to suddenly drop in season three, that he would leave? He would get over a crush on Karen or something.
So what I'm wondering is like. Is it because Pam kind of needs Jim more than Karen needs Jim, right? Like, it makes me think about the job again when he's like, you don't have to sit here and wait for me to go through my interview. And she's like, oh, good, because I have friends and I'm going to go see them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I feel like we're meant to feel in that moment a little tinge of like, no, you're supposed – like, Karen, you're supposed to sit there and just hang with him.
I don't think Pam like needs Jim for like anything in terms of.
But she's
career.
So lonely.
No, and I just think she needs Jim, and Jim needs her in the way that they need a soulmate, they need a partner. And I think their chemistry is so clearly potent enough that they're obviously magnetically attracted to each other, and that's never going to change. I do feel that way a little bit more about Jim and Karen. I feel like Jim is pretty lonely, and he starts to be a little more reckless and a little less communicative because he's like, I'm just trying to deal with this Pam thing, and he starts dating Karen almost flippantly. Karen flippantly. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
One thing that I've heard that I think is kind of interesting is that Jim and Karen, I think I saw a meme or something along the lines of that, but that Jim and Karen are a good match and that Jim and Pam are a perfect match. So it's a good match versus a perfect match. And that's kind of how it shook out. And I think that's a helpful way to think about it because Jim and Karen are clearly a good match, but they don't seem to be on the same page with certain things.
There is something about their chemistry that is viscerally is very just like it's never quite settled into place. It's very close.
And I think
it's always like it's always close. Yeah.
The way that the show is constructed, you mentioned about stacking the deck. The show does not seem to stack the deck for Karen and Jim to get back together. I'm thinking of there are moments in safety training when they're betting. Karen says to the camera, I don't know this place as well as I thought I did. I'm getting cleaned out. Which I think is kind of a subtle way that she's maybe not a long-term fit within the office, or that she won't be in the office long-term. Mm-hmm. It's just little moments like that that kind of stand out to me.
And as the show ages, as we get further and further along in time after the show airs, and just more and more memes and all these things that we see about The Office constantly, do you guys get the sense there's an overwhelming sort of line of thinking that, like, why did Jim break up with Karen? I don't agree with it. I don't like this line of thinking, but there's a lot of people that's like, why didn't Jim stay with Karen? She's so much better than Pam. And it's like, okay, first of all, I don't like this discussion of, like, she's better than her yada yada, and like pitting Pam and Karen against each other without acknowledging everything Jim did. That seems super reductive because, like, Jim messed this whole thing up by just not, like, communicating well and being a little callous towards Karen, which is the exact same thing he did with Kathy on the boat and Booze Cruise. Very callous about it.
So that was another moment
Katie, not Kathy. Katie, my bad.
That was another moment where it seemed like he was pushed into a corner by his partner,
right,
and he reacts in a bad way. Mm-hmm. She says, do you think we'll ever be like that? And he says, no, let's break up. There's something really awful about the way that he was in that moment.
Definitely.
And I think Jim is such an interesting character because he's portrayed as someone who's got all this charm and charisma and ability. Even as he goes into the job and Pam is describing him, she says, oh, he's super smart and everybody loves him. And it is interesting, like, this line of thinking that Jim, like, what he did was actually not he didn't treat Karen very well. That sentiment feels a lot stronger in response to this notion of Jim as this sort of ascending, talented, smart, charismatic, funny guy.
Yeah. He's not. He's really boyish through the first few seasons. Like, he's super, super boyish. I mean, think about, like, he clearly has a view of himself of happy-go-lucky guy who never quite gets what he wants. Like, he's always kind of just, whatever, man, let's listen to some records, right? He's just sort of going with the flow, and the flow doesn't always go his way, which means, you know, he likes to be in love with a girl he's never going to get. He's like, I'm a junior, I'm a paper salesman. I'm just, as opposed to the Philly Jim that we see, the character he makes for himself in Second Life. That's who he wants to be. He's never going to be that. And he's always like, that's just who I am and whatever. And so maybe he likes this. He has this connection with Pam because there's almost like this, it has a game quality to it of like, it's never going to happen, but it might. And it's, I have this dream, but I never get my dreams. And so
with
well, I was just going to say, with Katie and Karen, they both don't want to play those games. They're both just like, hey, are you in or out? And whenever he's pressed, he's like, I'm out. That's what Jim does.
With Jim, especially as it relates to his professional ambition, there is a notion or a sentiment in the first few seasons that feels like, if I don't try, I can't fail.
Right.
There, it feels like there's an Office Olympics. Pam talks about how when Jim is really invested and excited about something, you know, everyone comes along with him, and she sees him in a different way. Unfortunately, Jim works here, so that doesn't happen very often. And that seems to be kind of the thing that keeps Jim within the office. But later, of course, he does become more ambitious and goes for it. I think it's one thing to note is that, you know, maybe not, I won't say in Jim's defense, but I will say, like, Jim did leave the situation. He did move, and he did attempt to create a new life for himself. And then he got smashed back into Scranton.
Right.
He didn't try to go back to Scranton. Even when Michael said, you know, in the convention, when Jim says, talks about how he moved because of Pam to Michael, once again, confiding in the world's worst confidant, Michael says, no, don't you know? She's single now. I could call her for you. And he's, That Jim kind of does try to move on, even though those feelings are still unresolved.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's sort of like, just stick to the plan. Like, even though
he didn't ask to be put back into an office with his now girlfriend and the girl that he always carries a torch for, but that's what ends up happening. He doesn't deal with it in the right way, but you know, he is kind of, it does just kind of shake out that way for him, that's the situation he finds himself in.
You know, and another thing that I want to mention is just like that in the merger, at the end of that episode, he's on the phone with Karen, and then he says he's going to call her right back because he sees Pam walking through the parking lot, and then he gets out and walks towards her and says, hey, I'm kind of seeing someone now. And she's like, oh, that's fine. You know, we're friends. Like, we'll always be friends. But just the fact that he is stopping Pam to tell her that, but won't tell Karen.
That's a very good point.
Is really important, I think, that in a way he's almost trying to be more honest with Pam than he is with Karen right from the beginning.
And this, I mean, the relationship between Jim and Pam is one of the show's main exports.
It's
right.
The
obviously we're gonna like that's what we're gonna care about and pay attention to for so long and put a lot of time into, and we don't. You're just never gonna get that with so. Karen's just an unfortunate casualty in that story. It's that serves Jim and Pam's story.
Right.
And that's
from a narrative perspective. Yeah.
From a narrative perspective, that's her role. And it's unfortunate because she's a real person. She's not.
That's the thing. We love the show so much that these characters feel so real to us. And we don't want anything to be treated poorly in that way.
And I think her experience is really real for a lot of people who've been in that role, who've been with someone who doesn't want to necessarily be with them as much.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's heartbreaking.
It sucks. Yeah. It's so heartbreaking.
Well, I think it's extremely important that, you know, Jim, that we go through this story arc in season 3. And, you know, we've talked about it before on the show, like things feeling earned, you know, the things working out between Jim and Pam, like, was it earned? And and I feel like yes, especially because of, I mean, of course, everything that we went through with Pam and Roy, but then that they're like, and it's not over yet. Now we got Jim and Karen, like, and we have to go through all of that together. And still, and it's messy, and people get hurt, And, you know, it's kind of, again, it's hard to look at it, at the whole thing, and not think, well, Jim's kind of a jerk, you know, after all that. But that's real life. And that's why it feels so, that's why it has so much weight to it, and why it's such a beautiful story in the end.
I think you can hold all these things true, that the Jim-Pam relationship is earned through the end of that season. That moment that he comes back in the job is earned and is really great, because Pam is speaking from a place of where she's expecting Jim to get the job as she's narrating the interview with David, or she's speaking over the interview with David Wallace where Jim finds the memo with the Dundee, or no,
it's not a Dundee, it's the Office Olympics medal.
It's the yogurt lid. I've made this mistake before. but that, and then you can also hold true that Jim did not treat Karen very well at all through the latter half of that season. All these things can be held true, and that, yeah, to your point, it's messy and it's hard and people get hurt. And I think it was funny prepping for this. I started focusing just on Jim and Karen, but I was like, I should watch Pam as well to kind of get another sense of where Pam is at the beginning of the season and stuff. And I thought it was so funny that even while I'm trying to focus on Jim and Karen, Pam just keeps creeping in. Mm-hmm. It felt a lot like that meme photo or that scene in Happy Hour where Dwight is walking with Isabel and Angela's right behind them. It's as if Jim is walking with Karen and then Pam is right behind them.
Oh, fuck. We got an email from Sarah in Cincinnati about this very thing here. She says, sure, it comes off as a sweet gesture, but do you think there was a deeper underlying reasoning for Pam doing that? Yes, Jim and Karen are together, and Pam is okay with it. But I think she included that note and medal as a last attempt to win Jim back, for lack of a better phrase. Mm. She knew how much Jim liked her, so obviously including something that meaningful would have had some effect on him. I know we're supposed to think of Pam as this nice, innocent character, but I can't help but wonder, what do you guys think?
It's super interesting. I think one thing that I noticed in The Job is that The Job is the only episode where Karen and Pam, I almost said Cam, where they're openly sort of passive aggressive toward each other. Mm. When their interactions are, Karen says, hey, Pam, can you make a copy of me and Jim's sales records for the interview? And then Pam says to Karen, I really hope you get the job. Mm. And there's even a look of Karen trying to puzzle that out. So it is super interesting.
Pam's kind of a bitch.
Yeah, that's the moment where I feel like we as viewers are kind of supposed to turn on Karen or sour on Karen a little bit. And that's super interesting. I haven't thought about it in that way, but I suppose it's true. Or maybe that's another sort of beautiful ambiguity that we have here.
Right.
Was it a nice gesture for her friend, or was it this last ditch Kelly Kahoo?
As time goes on. Yeah, yeah.
I could see it as a genuine goodbye. She thinks he's gonna get the job. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, but I think that there's, even if it was a genuine goodbye, I definitely think that there's a tiny part of her that's like, maybe he'll realize, you know, if he sees.
I'm just thinking now, if she did that really on purpose as a very cold and calculated move, that last scene where she's kind of tearing up and she says, what was the question? I would love it if she's just straight face looking right into the camera and like she gives a smile, like a sinister smile, knowing that this was all according to plan. What was your question? Yeah.
Wow, what a shift.
I
changed the whole show.
One thing that I'm curious to, that I kind of observed, and I'm curious to hear what you guys think, is I kind of feel like Jim was preparing to be moved on and to commit to Karen up until Benihana Christmas, when he's sitting there with Michael and they have that, it's a two shot of them on the couch and Michael is so upset. And Jim is kind of comforting him and he says, you had a rebound. That was, you know, it's fun at the time, but at the end, it really makes you think of the girl that broke your heart and it makes you think of how you want to be with them.
Yeah.
And then he looks over and he sees Roy and Pam have this moment where Roy has given her a book, and he just kind of has that look in his eyes. And I feel like the timbre of all of the interactions between Jim, Karen, and Pam change after that one episode.
Mm. Is that the moment?
Yeah.
The moment their relationship jumped the shark.
There are so many Well, I don't know if you'd call it the shark. Maybe it's like a Dwight bobblehead or a or a plant that has a karaoke machine power cord hidden in it or something like that.
Margarita maker.
A nutcracker.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was really taken by watching these episodes is how many just sort of sad, empty moments is with one of them looking at two of the others. The one that hits me the hardest is in it's in Phyllis's wedding. There are two. It's when Pam is sitting alone at the table and Jim and Karen are dancing and Kevin and Scranton and City 2 are playing Fields of Gold. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jim is looking down at Karen. Then he looks up at Pam and he sees her. They make eye contact. And then, you know, you kind of feel that longing, and then Pam walks away. And then later in the episode, Jim is standing up at the front and Pam and Roy have had their interactions and she sees Pam. He sees Pam leave with Roy. Mm-hmm. It's just another, these sad sort of. Just these moments of, they're just very emotional moments.
Totally.
It's not a party if you don't do something that scares you.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't think anything hurts as much as this after this season. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, nothing is quite.
Meredith
as
got hit by a car.
Physically, yeah.
Well, that's just hilarious. To wrap up, you know, Jim and Karen, I think, you know, we got to talk about Branch Wars, just their last, their final interactions. Is kind of a beautiful poetic justice for Karen. She
just
gets
peeing
kind of,
on the ashes of their fire. That's what that scene is.
I love the way that it's brought up, the way that Jim is so he's so upset that they're going to Utica in the first place. And then he's only there so they don't do too much damage. And Michael and Dwight are there. And Michael, I love when Jim is reclined in the seat of the car and he's just, Jim, take Karen to a motel, make love to her. Do it for Stanley. Jim. Climb on top of Garrett and think about Stanley.
Everything Jim. That Jim doesn't want to happen happens.
And he says, and stop using my real name. Jim, Jim, you have to, if we don't make it out of this, you have to promise me one thing. Jim, host the Dundies.
Everything Jim doesn't want to happen happens, including being confronted by Karen. And I love the way she dismisses Michael and Dwight. It's like, Jim, could you hang on a sec? He's like, yep. Like, he knows he's headed to the gallows in that moment. And the way they frame it, he sits with his arms crossed like he's in a principal's office. And Karen's sitting on her desk, physically way higher than Jim. Mm-hmm. And Karen, I love how much she relishes the moment. Because she knows she's got Jim in her pocket. She's in the right. She's moved on in her life, and she's like, I got one last thing to say here, and I'm going to nail it. And she does, which is just the way it all happened and goes down. It's delicious.
It's perfect. I'm happy for her in that moment.
After we see all these moments where Karen has to pin Jim down and make these really direct, uncomfortable questions, do you still have feelings for her? These sort of interactions with Jim, it's funny to see that reflected again where he's in the car and she says, what are you doing here? And he says, well, first of all, by the way, it's really great to see you. What are you doing here? I'm just here to check on all the branches. Michael wants me to do that from time to time. What are you doing there? Like, she just
like, come on, dude.
Talk his way out. Yeah. And then again, like you said, in that moment where she's really got him pinned down, she's standing there over the three of them. They all have their arms crossed. Mm-hmm. And Dwight, listen, lady, if you keep, you can expect these kinds of repercussions if you keep trying to steal our people.
Poach our people. The way he says poach our people with that mustache is just very satisfying.
She says, yeah, I cried for weeks over that guy. So to see him crawl out of a PT Cruiser in a ladies warehouse uniform. Yeah, that felt pretty good. So there is a little bit of a Karen getting a bit of revenge there.
Yeah.
And she's the manager now. And she's like, turns out it's an easy job when your boss isn't an idiot and your boyfriend is in love with someone else.
Exactly. And then later in lecture circuit, we find out that she's met Dan. They met at a bar. They're very happy together. She's going to have a kid. So everything works out for Karen Filippelli in the end, which is,
I think,
a nice, you know, console.
Can't say the same about Jim.
Yeah, right.
Before we totally wrap on this, I just want to mention that in Lecture Circuit, there was an ad that aired on live TV in the lead up to this episode that I remember very clearly, where it was something to the effect of the announcer says, "This week on The Office," and then big surprises are in store, and then you see Karen pregnant.
Yeah,
and then the first, and then in the episode, Michael goes after it immediately. Yeah. Oh my gosh, is that Jim's? No, yeah. What are you talking? Of course not. It's okay.
I'm just trying to figure out when the last time.
Oh, my mind.
Sex is.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh.
I'm just thinking about when the last time you could have been together. What, 10 months? 10 months? But
that moment is so insane.
So
bad. That Pam gets closure with Karen as well, I think is important for both of the characters.
Yeah.
That Karen says, I'm happy. I'm, you know, with my husband. And she gives Pam a hug when she finds out they're engaged. And then as they're walking away, Michael says, Karen, wow, kind of mean. And Pam says, I like her. I'm glad I got closure. Mm-hmm. So there's something to that. That's really nice.
Yeah.
It is a nice punctuation mark at the end of this whole thing, because you do get the sense of like, neither Pam nor Karen, they were both casualties of Jim's at one point in a way. And like, I feel like at the end, and they're like, look, I know we could have been great friends. Like if there hadn't been this massive wedge between us. And it is a really nice way to sort of wrap it up, because it didn't feel good that it ended that way with Pam and Karen and her just kind of suddenly kicked out after the job. You know, that wasn't
great. In our Patreon episode, and I hate to, you know, fold in a detail from our Patreon episode, that was about adding an additional character to the cast, and one that I kind of thought would make sense is a friend or a relationship for Pam in season 3, where she's not just so alone. As she's coming into her own and finding courage, just to have a buddy or a friend, or like maybe her sister who's introduced later, someone to talk to during this time that isn't Roy or Jim or her mom, just another character like that. And the truth is, it's Karen at times in Benihana Christmas. Mm. And granted, she's the one who reaches out to Karen. She said that she's been kind of cold to her, but they do have real friendship moments there when two of them are going up against Angela and and then and Ben Franklin
parties
when they're reacting together. They seem like they could have been great friends, to your point. Another detail that I really love from this is after Branch Wars, when Jim comes back to the office, Pam says, Rolando called and he told me everything. And then in Electric Circuit, when they show up, Michael says, Rolando, this is Pam. She's our receptionist. Maybe the two of you can go on a little friend date.
Yeah.
But clearly they've been introduced.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Just shout out to Rolando the way he says, hi, Michael. Like he's just he's had to deal with Michael so many times. Oh,
he says, you're late. Everyone's in the conference room.
Yeah. All right, fellas. Any other thoughts on Jim and Karen before we move on?
I got one. I think I brought this up a little bit as far as like the beauty of ordinary things, the pain of ordinary things. I love their relationship just because of the messiness of romance in our modern world, and life is just never as clean as you want it to be. And I think the writers of the show did a really, really good job, like you said, Edwin, with the silent moments, the glances, the things that go unsaid, the unwillingness to talk about it, being unsure. It's all of those things rolled up into this relationship between them. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Karen is pushed out, and it's a bummer. But like that's part of the ordinary things that we like about the show. And I think they did a great job of sort of painting that picture. And I think as time goes on and as the internet continues to dissect the show, it does, more and more people are like, hey, why didn't Jim just stay with Karen? And I think it's a mistake to look at it that way, because it's about the narrative story that they told, and Karen was a character to help tell that story. And I think it doesn't take away from how good of a fit Jim and Pam are. I think we need to remember that.
I've got,
because we see a lot of their dirty laundry, Jim and Pam. We don't see any of Jim and Karen's, really.
True that.
Two things, I guess, and I know we've gone on quite a bit, but one thing that I've noticed is that Jim and Pam's interactions, their conversations that eventually break out into jokes and laughter, there's a music to it. It's a tension and release. And I'm thinking specifically of when they're in the break room and they're talking about, it's a back from vacation when Pam Jim is asking Pam for advice about what he should do about Karen moving in close. And, you know, Pam says, you should go easy on her. How far away does she live before? Like 10 minutes. And then eventually it breaks into. Also, Jan went to Jamaica with Michael. And they're like, yeah, how are we not talking about this? There's a sort of tension release that happens in so many of the interactions. And with Jim and Karen, it just isn't the same. The rhythm isn't there. The laughs aren't there in the exact same way. I'm thinking of when at the end of the negotiation, when Jim says to Karen, I just feel bad. Like, now that I'm trying to do something nice for him, I can't do anything. And she says, well, maybe you feel bad about all the pranks that you played. And he says, yeah, maybe that's, you're right. What should I do? And then she says, you should go out there and sell papers so we can go on a trip. It's just a different punctuation. And then just as a final thought, in watching this again, I felt bad for Pam at the beginning of the season because she felt so alone. She was coming off her wedding. She still hadn't found her courage yet, which is what happens over the course of the show, as illustrated by Oscar talking about her painting and then herself. Oh, yeah. Speaking up at beach games and at the end of the season. So I felt bad for Pam at the beginning, bad for Jim in the middle because he didn't ask to be brought back to his old workplace with the girl that he was in love with but couldn't be with. And then at the end, I felt bad for Karen because of the way that Jim treats her and the way their relationship ends.
It's a good way. It's a good way to put it.
It's a perfect way to put it. Well, you guys, to wrap it up then, Jim and Karen – you know, of course, one day we'll do an episode on Jim and we'll talk about all this some more, I'm sure. But for now, let's move into a little conference room. 5 minutes.
All right, everybody in the conference room. I don't care if you are gay or straight or a lesbian or overweight. Just get in here right now.
I rewatched that when I got that drop. I had never realized. I think he points at Meredith when he says lesbian. Mm-hmm. He makes it very, he's like, gay, straight, or lesbian, and he points directly at someone. I think it's Meredith.
Hey, can you allow me to share my screen?
Yes, of course. Now, how about now?
Right. Great. So yesterday I was watching The Convict, and I noticed in this cold open we've got Hannah.
For the listeners, Sean has shared his screen on Zoom, and he's showing us a picture of Hannah holding her baby.
Yeah, so this is a picture of – this is in the beginning of The Convict, the cold open is Hannah introducing her baby to the office. And I thought it was strange that she's holding the baby very low and mostly by the crotch.
It's true. It's very true.
So I texted our – shout out to our friends who are moms and dads, Matt, Kate, Peter, Mary, and Chris and Mary. And I said, hey, moms and dads, is this a weird way to hold a baby? This is Hannah from The Office holding her baby boy. It started a huge thread.
Oh, my God. Sean is just
holding
scrolling
babies
through
by
this
the crotch. And everyone, basically the consensus was that.
Oh, that's such a cute
look
picture.
At that strawberry costume.
Oh, that's adorable. Oh,
basically,
wow.
The consensus was that they've all held their babies by the crotch, but they would never hold a stranger's baby by the crotch. So so it's okay that Hannah is holding her baby by the crotch. And
Peter.
I'm just showing these guys all the
crotch. They all have one.
Wait, where's the picture of Peter? Can I see it? Sorry.
Yeah, this is the picture of Peter.
holding
his daughter
so
by the crotch.
Funny.
Gosh.
Oh, gosh.
I know you said that would be a quick, fun conference room. I did not expect it. That was pretty. That was fun.
I just thought it was. I thought it was funny. But anyway, let's do a little trivia and wrap this thing up, baby.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Okay, trivia coming in this week from Julian. Julian, to all my Trailer Park Boys out there, don't know where they didn't say where they're from, so here we go.
He's from the internet.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be reading these trivia questions for the first time, so I don't know how hard they are.
All right,
that's what she said. Okay. Which episode does your original conference room drop come from? All right, that's it, everyone. Conference room, 5 minutes, the classic one.
Oh, that's a great question.
Is it from
sexual harassment?
No, you're kind of on the right track, but no.
So season two, early season two.
Mm-hmm.
Dwight's speech?
No, it's Women's Appreciation.
That's season three.
Season three, sorry. Question two. Which two football teams will Andy be watching over the weekend in the return?
I think your audio cut out for a second there. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Which two football teams will Andy be watching over the weekend in the return?
Cornell, Hofstra, Slaughter.
Slaughter. Fun fact, it says, Hofstra has since discontinued its football program, so slaughtered indeed. Question three. Which two rom-coms does Kelly mention when describing Netflix to Ryan?
Bridget Jones' Diary?
No.
That's the present. That's what they give each other. Jim and Carrie give each other.
Great guess, though. Great
Love
guess.
Love Actually.
Love Actually, yes.
What a Girl Wants?
No. Uptown Girls. Uptown Girls.
What a Girl
from
Wants
the bloopers,
is from Beach.
Daryl used to be a cheater until he saw Love Actually.
Ah.
Well, fun thing. Okay, what is the name of the German folktale that Dwight reads to the children in Take Your Daughter to Work Day?
Struppeter.
Yes, very good. Question five. A kid on a Ferris wheel once threw this on Kelly, prompting her to get angry at Ryan for not defending her.
Milkshake.
Yes, very good. Number six, how many jelly beans were in the jar when everyone bet on it, Stanley? Everyone bet on it in safety training, and who won the bet?
It's
a
like
number question, not our favorite.
46, 42.
Wow, 49.
49.
Very close. Okay, Stanley's daughter drinks like 100 of these a day.
It's like iced mocha latte.
Oh, you're so close.
It's something
Sean,
like that.
Do you know this?
No.
Ice smoke of Frappuccino kind
of thing. Ice macchiatos.
Ice
macchiatos. Very good. What's the name of Andy's high school girlfriend? High school aged girlfriend.
Oh, man.
She's the student / part-time TCBY yogurt chef.
Correct. Which is high school job. No, but it does start with that letter.
Okay, Julia.
No, that is the girl Andy.
Yeah. What is it?
It is Jamie.
Jamie.
Yes. Okay. In the Jack Black Cloris Leachman movie from season 7.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Albert Hannaday. Who does Andy say was originally supposed to be cast as the female lead?
Nicole Kidman.
Very good. How big does Michael's raise end up being in the negotiation? Percentage points.
15%? 12.
Ask for 15 and you get 12, exactly.
I bought you jade earrings.
Yep. What is the name of Dunder Mifflin's corporate receptionist?
Stephanie?
Grace. Close. Grace. These are good questions, Julian.
Because you got Hunter the assistant, Stephanie is David Wallace's assistant, Kendall the HR guy. Like
yes, yeah. there's a lot of traps, a lot of traps.
Dunder Mifflin, this is Grace, in the job, yeah.
Yep. While there are many billionaires mentioned on The Office, who's the only one to actually make an appearance in an episode?
Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, easy. The opening shot of Back from Vacation features a figurine of what historical character?
Opening shot of Back from Vacation.
Whoa.
It's not just...
It's a figurine of a historical character. Historical characters / historical mascot / cartoon character.
I don't know. What is it?
Think 4th of July.
Oh, Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam. Very good. Mm. Question 14. Dwight has a disturbing tendency to spank his female co-workers on the behind.
Correct.
In which episodes, respectively, does he do this to Angela, Kelly, and Pam?
Okay. Diversity. Oh, no. For Kelly, it's customer survey.
Kelly, it's lecture circuit part
two. Lecture circuit. Okay. It's when it's her birthday.
The nap.
With Angela, it's the injury.
Yes, very good.
And Pam.
Because he has a concussion and acting out of character.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And Pam.
Happens in Dwight Christmas later on. I don't remember the moment. I can't bring it to mind right now.
I don't know it.
Yeah, same.
But that's a good one. Gonna look for that.
Okay. three U.S. presidents are impersonated or imitated by characters on the show at some point. Who are those three presidents?
Three presidents are impersonated?
Yes, by characters.
Ronald Reagan?
Yes, very good.
By Oscar?
Yes.
Or no, by the senator.
Yeah, or sorry, by the senator.
He was dressed like Ronald Reagan. Yeah. Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, very good. This third one is tough.
Oh, Ben Franklin. I'm just kidding. this third one.
Michael does the impression.
Uh-huh. Is it Abraham Lincoln once said, if you were racist, I will attack you with the North? That's not
No, no. It's an impersonation. It's an impersonation of someone who is not yet president.
Barack
narrows
Obama?
It down, narrows it down to two people.
Donald Trump.
It's not Obama.
Oh, it's Donald Trump.
It's Donald Trump. You're fired.
Oh, yeah, that's
very
right.
Unfortunate. Yeah. Technically, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Unfortunately, that's true. That happened. Question 16. Kevin will be a very rich man if this actor ever wins an Oscar.
John Cougar Mellencamp.
Of course. And this is the hard one. I don't know. If you get this, hats off to you. What was the date of Roy's DUI arrest? For the basement difficulty Whoa. Question here. Way down in the
May
archives.
16th.
That's my birthday, Sean. That's very sweet of you.
My gosh, happy birthday.
It's not, I mean, it's not, but that day is my birthday.
April 6th, 2006.
It's close to when their wedding was supposed to be.
June
7th.
Late
June 27th. 2006.
I got the year.
I had graduated from high school not 2 weeks earlier, I think. if memory serves. That's it, Julian.
Thank you.
Hell of a set of questions
thank
there. Also, I wanted to say thanks again to that email we got earlier.
Yes. Yes. As he finds
from?
It.
Sarah.
Guys, thank you guys so much. For sending in the trivia, sending in your messages. You can email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can call us, 503-694-9314. Leave us a message. We'd like to play them on the show. You can hit us up on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company, on Twitter, at Michael Scott Pod. We got a website, michaelscottpod.com. And please, if you feel so inclined, join us on patreon.com/Michael Scott. Become a Scott's Tot for $5 a month. You get an extra mailbag episode special for our Patreon subscribers. And
videos
now video
of those as well. Mm-hmm. And I know
Wi-Fi
we
will be yes. available. The videos are up now, finally. One.
And we mentioned this before too, but we supporting the show. Obviously, it just helps us to do the show. But now, as we go forward, a portion of our show will be going towards the things that Michael Scott was not able to do, which is providing money for graduate or for tuition funds
That's right.
for students.
Yeah. Shout out to Kayla on Instagram who sent us a message asking if the Scott's Tots Patreon. Because, you know, Scott's Tots are our Patreon supporters. If that money actually goes to paying for college tuition, and it made us think that we should be it's giving like, more to charity.
Yeah, great idea. Like,
yeah,
of course you should.
It seems pretty straightforward. But in June, we did make a donation.
We made a few donations. Actually.
Yeah, a few different donations to some organizations fighting racial injustice in this country. And I think we're going to look to different charities we're going to make that a more regular thing. I think we need to figure out the cadence and exactly what the organizations are, but we are absolutely looking to make that money into charitable donations in the future.
Yeah.
Yes. So
in the spirit of what Michael Scott was trying to do.
The Michael Scott Correct. Foundation.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we're always going to have a percentage of all the money that comes in for the show. All of it is going to be going towards that. So when you support the show, again, you help us make the show and cover our time of just doing the show. We're not making money on this show. We want to give it back. Yeah. It also helps us. It helps you get some extra episodes and have some fun with us and get all your questions answered that you send us. If you're constantly sending us questions and we don't answer for some reason, join Todd, send us a question. We'll definitely talk about it.
Yeah.
And of course, giving that money back. So the longer we can make the show, the bigger we make the show, the more dreams we make come true.
Yeah, Yeah. So
an office is a place where dreams come true.
So thank you so much to all of our Scott's Tots, all of our Patreon supporters. Thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who helps with our social media and designs our artwork. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon over video chat.
Please remember to rate and review the show. It helps us, helps people find the show. Thank you, as always, for listening. Take care. Stay safe. And we'll see you next week.
Hippity poppy, give me the zavada.
Yes, sir.
Here's a non-hypothetical. I'm really happy I'm with Karen.
Every little thing she does.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.